Thank you very much, Alvy. In the meantime, we are joined by a senior NBA writer for The Athletic, host of the Tampering Podcast. My man, Sam Amick, is back. Sam, before we get into everything else, how is life inside the bubble treating you these days?
Romy, what is going on, my friend? We are hanging in. I was just telling Adam offline that it takes you a couple weeks to get your feet under you inside the bubble and learn about how to move and where you go to eat and where you go to sleep and what you can do, what you can't do. But we're getting there, and I'm coming to you poolside, so it could be worse. We're just hanging out on a fairly slow day inside the bubble leading up to tonight's game.
My man, I love that. I love that you're poolside. You earned that, Sam. All right, so Miami goes up 2-0 on Boston last night. What do you make of the performance from the Heat, and then in particular, what it did psychologically and emotionally to Boston?
Yeah, it was a lot. And I tell you, the one unique thing about covering things in the bubble is, obviously, if you were having to travel all over the country to see these teams in person, you just wouldn't get the same type of exposure. Sorry about the background noise, brother. Somebody just did a cannonball there.
I like it.
The Heat clearly have the ability to kind of steal team souls, and they did it against Milwaukee, and they are together for 48 minutes. And what jumped out to me post-game after that chaotic Celtics locker room scene was Jaylen Brown really kind of, I thought, hit the nail on the head. He talked about the togetherness and how the Heat are together for 48 minutes and the Celtics weren't last night. And then the Bucks before them. It's not just Jimmy Butler, but he is a massive part of it. Now you're seeing the emergence, you know, even more so of Bam Adebayo. Goran Dragic was fantastic last night. So that group has something special, and they're taking it to everybody they play right now.
We're talking to Sam Amick. So in terms of them snatching souls, for instance, I mean, I could say to you, was it one bad night, but it's two bad nights. But where does that leave them? In other words, if you're Brad Stevens, how concerned are you about the chemistry and the emotions of your team?
Yeah, I think you're worried. It's funny to compare maybe the Clippers and the Celtics. You know, the Clippers just absolutely fell apart. They had no togetherness. There was nothing there. I don't think the Celtics are up against it in that regard from a team chemistry togetherness standpoint, but they just don't have what the Heat have. I would be worried if I was Brad. You know, Arshan Shirani at The Athletic had put something out this morning with more detail on the locker room scene, and it sounds like it was very much a Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown kind of frustration moment, and other assistant coaches involved. Marcus is just a fiery dude. We've known that, you know, for a long time now. And Jaylen, I thought, I tell you, to sit in the room and hear him talk, you know, minutes after that kind of a moment in the locker room was so impressive, because he really centered himself and sat there actually sharing a lot of love for Marcus and talking about that's why we love him, that's why we need him. And so maybe that kind of spirit is enough with Jaylen playing a leadership role to quickly bring them back together. But it was really hot, and so we'll see how they respond.
Sam Amick, poolside, inside the bubble. Sam, one thought about Jimmy Butler. A couple of weeks back, you did have a conversation with him at practice. What was that chat like, and what was your biggest takeaway from it?
It's funny, because the last time I had talked to Jimmy at any great length was the night before, you know, in a one-on-one setting, was the night before he got traded to Philly, and he was still with the T-Wolves, and they were in Sacramento. And it just a bizarre night, because they lost. He was not happy. Yeah, he kind of went off in our interview afterwards. And at that time, you know, like I've told him since, he had the black hat on. He was the NBA villain. He was the bad guy. And everything that he stood for and everything that he was about was, for the most part, perceived as a bad thing within that environment. He was too hard on Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. You know, he was too much. He was too over the top. And then, as he's been saying ever since, and like we talked about in this latest interview, I mean, he's like a guy that just found his soulmate. You know what I mean? Like, this culture, this organization with the Heat from Pat Riley on down, they're kind of about that basketball life in the same exact way that he is. And it's fun to watch. I mean, there's a little ritual after the Heat win games that I keep making a point to you know, make sure I don't miss, is they walk off the floor. And the security guy for the Heat, and I wish I knew his name, but he's this real friendly dude, super kind of stacked, swole guy. He'll grab Jimmy and he'll grab the other players, and he'll point up to the second deck where Pat Riley is sitting with Andy Ellisberg, the Heat GM. And it's a respect, kind of a, you know, like Pat's the Don, and they got to make sure they point to him, you know, fist pump, whatever it might be, and enjoy the moment. And that's the whole thing, is the togetherness is not just in the locker room. I mean, it goes all the way to the top, too.
That's culture. Culture and fit. That's great. Sam Amick is joining us. And Sam, you mentioned the Clippers. You've had a few days to think about their collapse. And in fact, back in January, you actually had a piece on their chemistry issues back in January. So how much of blowing that 3-1 lead and those double-digit leads in each of the final three games goes back to that?
Yeah, I think there's a through line there for sure. And it's funny, Jim, when we wrote that piece, I mean, teams get upset all the time about different things we might write because, you know, we obviously don't work for them and we're not here to be publicists. But that one in particular, they were hot and they were not happy. And there was a lot of pushback towards the idea that, you know, that we reported that there was some friction internally. Now, we never said there was anything explosive in terms of even like a Celtics-type situation, but you had this meshing of the old Clippers with the new Clippers and a belief system difference, I think, that they had to work their way through. Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Pat Beverly kind of represented the guys who were the underdogs who went farther than people thought they'd go last year, took pride in that. You know, but they're the kind of guys that want to play 48 minutes, you know, don't take days off, stuff like that. Then you had the load management crew coming in with Kawhi Leonard, to a lesser degree, Paul George, and that culture clash. And, you know, from that story however many months ago to the other night, I mean, you can see it playing as day. I mean, it's been reported now that, you know, Montrez and Paul got into it. Jim, I was sitting 20 feet away from the Clippers bench in Game 7, my favorite press seat in the bubble because you can really see what's going on. And they had about 7 minutes left, and they're down, I think, 13. And I'm looking at it going, all right, 13's not insurmountable, but their bench had gone from very spirited earlier in the game to golf claps and, you know, and heads on the ground. I mean, their spirit was completely gone, and that translated on the court too. You know, they waved the white flag. They gave up. So it was one of the more embarrassing finishes that I can remember for a top team.
No doubt. Sam Amick is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. So, Sam, back in January, you pointed out that when things went sour in San Antonio surrounding Kawhi and his injury, then he goes to Toronto and he wins it all, and that erased some of the issues surrounding team chemistry as it related to Kawhi's injury. So if you had to guess or if you had an opinion, how big a part is Kawhi in all this?
I just think, I mean, this is, you know, when a guy's an MVP caliber talent and in the conversation for best player on the planet, then inherently he's going to be nitpicking, right? So just to be clear, we are nitpicking. The guy's incredible. But I think what we've learned is that from a leadership standpoint, you know, the best formula for Kawhi is to be around people like a Kyle Lowry, who is vocal, you know, and even a Serge Ibaka, who, you know, talks a lot with his teammates. I think maybe we didn't, you know, Kyle's gotten a lot of love, but I think even not enough last season for the part he played in terms of their chemistry, and the Clippers didn't have that guy. You know, Pat Beverly is vocal, but it's not, he doesn't come with the, you know, same level of gravitas that a Kyle Lowry does. You know, he is a role player, and Kyle Lowry is an all-star. Paul George is, there's no negative side to, you know, that I've ever heard when it comes to kind of who he is as a teammate, but he doesn't have that voice. He's not that guy like a Kyle Lowry. And I think, you know, what we're seeing is that someone's got to fill that void around Kawhi because he's just not that guy either.
We're talking to Sam Amick for a few more moments. Sam, wasn't that something like NBA Twitter is still a thing, a great thing? Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum were having a great old time watching the Clippers get run out in Game 7. There, of course, is some history between the Clippers and the Blazers. But overall, what is your sense as to what players from other teams thought about this Clippers team? Were they also happy to see L.A. go down the way they went down?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of wrote about that today a little bit. Sometimes we, you know, just because you see superstars always saying nice things about each other in press conferences, that's not necessarily the real stuff. These guys are bitter competitors, and you saw that come out with those tweets from Damian and CJ. Now, you know, the Clippers lit that fire, right? Because Pat and Marquise Morris were laughing at Damian when he missed his free throws in that one seeding game, and so, you know, turnabout's fair play. But I actually, yesterday, I wanted to try to get perspective from the Lakers duo, from LeBron and AD on the Clippers' demise. And, you know, they weren't falling for it. They weren't having it. They took the high road and just said, you know, we're focused on ourselves. But I do think there's probably that element that there's a class of superstar that the Damian Lillard type that doesn't love it when players are so transactional in terms of their own career pursuits, if you will. And they, you know, there's a gray area there. They everybody's got the right to work where they want to work, but the way that Paul and Kawhi put that thing together is very, very different than a ground-up type of approach like the Nuggets are doing right now, and to a lesser degree, the Raptors, how they did it. So I think there was probably some guys that were happy, but it was something to see. I mean, I'll never forget three-pointers from Paul bouncing off the backboard, Kawhi missing at the rim. I mean, it was like that old Space Jam scene where the guys lose their talents. It was something else.
No, seriously, right? I mean, Paul George, Pandemic P, shooting off the side of the glass was something else, and these guys couldn't wait to get to their phones. It's great entertainment. Listen, before you go, you mentioned the Nuggets. I think that right there is an amazing organization. I love the way they put that thing together. How do you see that matchup going, and what is the biggest concern for the Lakers in this series?
The biggest concern for the Lakers is Jokic picking him apart, I think. And they've got bodies to put on him, and they can make it hard on him. I was going to go with Jamal, but I think, Jokic is the fulcrum of what they do. You know, they kind of operate inside out from him. But right there with Jokic is Jamal and his kind of streakiness and the fact that he's not nearly as hot and cold as he used to be even during the regular season. He's really found a rhythm. He's locked in. We had a great conversation the other day where, I don't know if you happen to see it, Jim, but it cracked me up. The man takes a five-hour nap before these games in the bubble. Like, he used to take a two-hour nap, but because he's decided that he's here for the job, he's here to play ball, that he doesn't see a point in doing anything else, so he rests for 5 hours before each game, and that's after sleeping for 8 hours the night before.
It's incredible.
It showed a level of focus and dedication that, he even said, he goes, from a mental health standpoint, players don't really enjoy being in the bubble for this long. And so he's just kind of simplifying things and trying to be the best player he can be. So those two guys are going to be a handful. And then, the Lakers, obviously, the threat they pose on the Nuggets side, LeBron and AD, and it's going to be about their role players. Can they hit some threes? Can they get out in transition? I know the Nuggets want to slow them down big time. That's a huge focus. So I think it should be a fun series. And we should have learned by now not to sleep too much on the Nuggets. I'm not here predicting any kind of sweep, but I think ultimately the Lakers probably get through.
I'm with you. Senior NBA writer for The Athletic, host of the Tampering Podcast, and poolside from the bubble, Sam Amick. Great job, Sam. Appreciate you. Always. No one better. There is our number one, Smooth and Easy.